Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 844. It's the 10th of August, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Martin Eales, CEO of Rainbow Rare Earths, and Martin discusses the exceptional rare earth grades confirmed at their project in Burundi. Plus, I also have Philip Prince, CFO of Defence, that's DFX, and Chris Maul, CEO of UK Bond Network, discuss their recent agreement to raise funds and what Defence intended to do with the money. Also on the podcast, George Katsaros, founder and non-executive director of Verditech. Ticker there is VDTK. And they floated on AIM today, first day listed. And George discusses their investment strategy, which is investments in disruptive clean technology companies. Very interesting, because I like that space. You know, it's a hot space, so worth listening for. Also, as it's a Thursday, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers Glencore results, Amick Foster Wheeler, and Ibstock. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Martin Eales, CEO of Rainbow Rare Earths. Ticker there is RBW. Martin, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure, Justin, as always.
Okay, well, you've released some positive news today. We'll get to that in a bit, Martin. But before we do, for people not aware of what you do there at Rainbow Rare Earths, can you explain in a summary form what you're all about, please?
Okay, well, we're still a relatively new company, Justin. We IPO'd on the London Stock Exchange in January this year. Ticker code, as you've said, is RBW. We are developing a rare earths mine in Burundi in East Africa. We raised money from our IPO to develop the mine and get into production. And we hope to be selling our first rare earth mineral concentrate in Q4 this year. So it's rapid progress. It's very exciting times through the development and startup of the mine. And we are still on track, which is the main news.
Okay, and the news today is entitled Exceptional Rare Earth Grades Confirmed. So take us through the detail, please, here, Martin.
Well, that's right. We came to market with knowledge that we had a high-grade rare earth project. And listeners might not know, you know, what is average in the rare earths world. But you know, I always say that people get very excited by a grade in a rare earth deposit of about 5%. Now, to put it into context, the main vein that we are mining first has come back from the lab at an average of 62% total rare earth oxides. Now, this is, you know, on average about at least 10 times what an average deposit is. It means we can mine very effectively in small volumes, and the high grade, of course, the higher the grade, the more money we earn for every ton we sell.
Yeah, that is excellent high grades, isn't it? And like I said, I'm not aware of what a grade is, but you pointed out there the average grade and your grade. So are you still on track for Q4 for production there?
Yes, we are. As with any startup project, there are lots of challenges, and we have a great team who are meeting those on a daily and weekly basis. But we've been fairly consistent with our commitment to the market that we'll make our first sales in Q4 this year. I'm pleased to say it's still on track. We've got lots of moving parts, so to speak. We have container loads of equipment coming into port in Mombasa very shortly, which will be transported and constructed on site for our processing plant. And we've been preparing the mining area for some months now, ready to feed that processing plant as soon as it's constructed and commissioned to hit that deadline of those first sales by the end of the year.
Yes, and I thought a very important point here. You have someone you're going to sell to.
Well, yes, we do. It's always important to stress that we have a partner, which is the German blue chip company ThyssenKrupp. They are our marketing or distribution agent. So effectively, ThyssenKrupp are finding the customers for us, negotiating all the sales contracts. And it can't be underestimated how important it is for a small company like us to have a big blue chip partner like ThyssenKrupp alongside. So we're very comfortable and pleased with that relationship.
And for people not aware of the rare earth space or marketplace there, Martin, take them through where is the demand and how is demand at the moment?
Well, demand is ever increasing, and simply put, as the world grows, the world consumes more products containing rare earths. So at a very basic level, the rare earth elements go into a wide variety of products, whether it's technology, your smartphones, computers, etc. Electric motors consume a lot of rare earths in the magnets. Wind turbines use magnets made from rare earths in their drive engines, and it's really magnets that drive the biggest chunk of the value chain for rare earths, but they are used for a multitude of different things, whether it's fuel refining or lighting or glass polishing, and the basket of rare earths we have is heavily weighted to those magnet materials. Every day we're seeing more news about electric vehicles and a demand for electric vehicles, and it's worth bearing in mind that every electric vehicle contains more rare earth elements than a traditional car, so the future is very exciting for demand.
Absolutely. And what's the life of the mine there, Martin?
Well, we don't have the traditional resources and reserves tables that you can extrapolate a life of mine in years, but the prospectus contained an independent competent persons report, which gave us an exploration target, they called it, of 20 to 80,000 tonnes of rare earths. Our short-term production rate is 5,000 tonnes a year, so it's fair to say, even on a conservative basis, we've got many years of production ahead of us. As we mine or prepare the mining area, we are finding new veins of material. As we undertake more exploration across the deposit, we're finding some very, very interesting new veins across our license area. So we're very confident there'll be many years of production ahead of us.
Excellent. Okay, and if someone's listening right now, Martin, and they're not following you, but like the fact you're going into production and you've got this now, you know, exceptional high grades confirmed, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on Vox Markets, please.
Okay, well, there are very few listed rare earth producing companies outside of China, around the world. We are in production by the end of the year, as I've said. There's only a couple of others in Australia who are extracting any tons from the ground at the moment. Rare earths as a sector is highly in demand for a wide variety of products. Prices have strengthened significantly this year. Even since our IPO, our basket price is up, as we put in the announcement today, about 33%. And for us, with very low overheads and effectively fixed mining costs, that all flows to the bottom line once we start selling. So we are indeed both very excited by the quality of what we're selling and the price we should achieve.
Excellent. Martin, good to chat to you, and hopefully speak again very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Philip Prince, CFO of Defence Group, that's DFX, and Christopher Maule, CEO of the UK Bond Network. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Good afternoon, Justin.
It's good to speak to you. And first of all, Philip, we'll come to you because we've got lots of news that have come out since we last spoke. You've been very busy there, and we'll cover some of that. But before we do so, could you, for people not aware of what Defence is all about, could you give a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please, Philip?
Of course. Defence was founded in 2009 by Andrea Stocconi, our chief executive officer. And back then, his vision was that smartphones would grow rapidly in popularity and they'd need protection from hacking, viruses and other malware. And that's turned out to be true. So Defence developed software to address this challenge. We started with security apps, that's antivirus protection. We then added on, through the acquisition of Memobile, cloud backup. And most recently, we've added protection apps, for example, parental control to protect children online. And that's essentially what we do today.
Excellent stuff. And you've recently raised some money. And could you explain why you raised the money, first of all, and what it's for, please?
Of course. Let me remind people that back in April, we announced a strategic partnership with BV Tech, an Italian IT solutions provider. They have been serving the Italian corporate market, particularly around cybersecurity. And that was the reason we teamed up with them in April, so they could take us to the corporate market. And the reason we're raising the money now is to accelerate our development of products that best suit their corporate customers, so we can take advantage of that route to market and accelerate our growth, adding on the corporate market to our traditional consumer market.
Excellent stuff. And you've raised it in several different ways. It was a subscription and a placing. And also you used the UK Bond Network as opposed to choosing normal routes. So why did you do this? What interested you in the Bond Network, please, Philip?
Well, you're right. We took some equity from our existing and other institutional investors, and then BB Tech themselves followed on. They're our largest shareholder still at just short of 29%. But we've always wanted to get the right debt and equity structure. So we've known UK Bond Network for a while, and a convertible bond is a perfect combination to equity. It has the option of converting to equity in due course, but at this stage it's debt, and it has certain advantages. So it's what we intended to do, and it fits in really well for us.
Okay, and so why specifically fundraise now?
Now is a really exciting time from cybersecurity. It's beginning to be one of those catchwords. People are aware of cybersecurity risks. We had the WannaCry ransomware attacks earlier this year, and that's raised publicity even further. And particularly with corporate boards, they really begin to think about what do they need to do. The other angle is that the EU's General Data Protection Regulation comes into force next May. And that provides us with a time-limited opportunity to pick up on the opportunity for cybersecurity investment. So by having the products to address those needs, plus BV Tech, we can then hit that market and continue our growth trajectory, adding on the corporate market to what we do already.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's move over to Christopher, who is CEO of the UK Bond Network. Hi, Christopher.
Hi there.
So let's go from your perspective. You know, what attracted you to working with Defence?
Yeah, I think firstly the fact that they're operating in a sector that's clearly very hot at the moment, and one that we find particularly interesting, and where we feel that there's a good opportunity for strong growth, and importantly feel that the management team are both well positioned and capable of executing their business model. We've been following the business for a while now since they IPO'd, and have been having dialogue with them over the last year or so. At that point, we collectively decided this was something that was best revisited the following year, and it's great to see how they've continued to deliver as a business during that period, ranging from adding further channel partners to moving into their fifth year of profitable growth, and delighted now that we finally managed to work together.
Yeah, and so you know, explain sort of, you know, like Philip mentioned there, that type of funding suits them at this time. They wanted the right sort of measure between debt and equity. But you know, explain why, you know, your type of funding better supports a growing business over the more sort of traditional routes.
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost the fact that we provide a higher level of flexibility, and we have a genuine desire to understand the business and get to know the management team, and use that information to propose essentially what is a tailored funding solution rather than something more mainstream and cookie cutter and off the shelf. And I think one of the key factors for Philip and his team was the fact that we could arrange underwriting of our bond issue, which provided a level of certainty to all parties in our ability to deliver that funding, which I guess is something of a difference to how the equity markets work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. Okay, well, Philip, if someone's listening now, they like the sector you're in because it's very hot, and we've seen of late especially, you know, the WannaCry, which created a lot of publicity around the world for the wrong reasons, but I suppose in some way the right reasons, and they're not following you on Vox Markets, but they're listening to you and they like the sector you're in, like I said. Give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Well, I would say, number one, cybersecurity is a huge, rapidly growing market. We're absolutely not going to run out of room to grow, and we've now added it on corporate part of that market as well. Number two would be we ourselves are growing rapidly. We're delivering high growth. Last year, 58% revenue growth, and then over the last 3 years, we've averaged 50% revenue growth. And we're profitable and now heading towards positive free cash flow despite rapid investment program. And then number three would be the extra impetus the partnership with BV Tech gives us. The funding and the access to corporates really is going to underpin the revenue growth in the future, adding high quality recurring revenues. So those would be my three reasons.
Excellent, guys. Christopher, Philip, thanks for taking the time, and hopefully we speak again soon. Thank you very much.
Many thanks.
Thank you. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Katsaros, founder and non-executive director of Verditech. That's VDTK. Ticker George, thanks for joining me.
Justin, a pleasure to meet you.
Now, not many people will have heard of you. It's your first day today listing on the market. And so for people listening right now, George, explain what the business is about, please.
Delighted. Vertec comprises three core green technologies. The first technology is a photovoltaic 50 megawatt production facility we have in San Marino. The second core activity is filtration, which basically are deodorization plants that go on wastewater plants and other plants that give off noxious smells. And the third core activity is a unique liquid gas absorption technology, the world's only co-current absorber that captures CO2 and other particulates.
Okay, tell us about the tiles, solar tiles, because I know, you know, electricity is going to be a massive driver over the next few years because governments around the world, including the UK government, are banning petrol and diesel engines. So there's a huge demand on the grid for electricity. And so solar, I assume, will play a big part of that. So you've got these solar tiles. Now, I've seen this this kind of technology, obviously previously with panels, but I've also seen Tesla and Elon Musk standing on a stage showing his tiles. So how do yours differ from these kind of tiles, George?
Well, I think the first thing to say is we're very excited. I think we've got the wind in our sails in terms of looking at a major new market that's opening up for us. And we're not disappointed to have the likes of Tesla launching a product at the same time as us because we're getting a lot of wonderful free marketing. There's nobody better than Elon Musk at telling the world what the next hottest thing that they need to have is after an electric car. They're doing a good job of spreading the news that having a solar roof will cut your energy bills drastically. We believe we've got the best mousetrap in the market. We're flexible. We're ultra light. We have a low offensive visual impact. So when people think of solar panels, they think of these ugly glass and heavy framed things that get stuck on roofs. This is a complete break with the past. You know, we can color up, we're flexible, we're ultralight, we can color the tiles for Southern Europe terracotta, we can color them slate for Northern Europe. They have a maximum efficiency, 160 to 200 watts per square meter, 30-year longevity, very minor degradation of 0.5% a year, and very easy to retrofit. So the difference with our roof and other roofs, like some of our American counterparts that are launching now, is that we can retrofit. You don't have to rip the roof off. And so the installation costs are minimal. So we are very excited about the USP that we have. And we're configuring a number of technologies that are already commercial in a unique way. As I say, it's a combination. The flexibility is very important. The microgrid wires that we're using replace the old-fashioned welded ribbons. So if you get any scratching or anything where you used to get a complete outage of a cell, we have a mesh of hundreds of microgrid wires built in, which is a much more robust solution.
But you say that yours has an advantage over what Tesla, because like you say, Elon Musk's amazing at marketing. They've got the brand now, so a lot of people trust brands. I assume your product has to have some kind of advantage. But you say it's what the advantage is basically.
As I say, we're in top, you know, quartile of efficiency. But it's when you look at the weighted average of all the parameters that we are a winner. So it's flexibility, it's weight, it's durability. And then it's the price point, which is very important. We are right at the low end of the price point in terms of solar roof tiles. So we think we're half the cost of some of these other roofs out there.
Yeah, and
aesthetic qualities.
Yeah, and you mentioned that with Tesla, they have to replace the whole roof. Is that okay? And yours, with you, they don't.
Well, that's our understanding, and we can actually retrofit on top of roofs, and we also have a very low percentage of. Requirement in terms of the average residential dwelling, you're talking about 100 square meters of roof, and we only need to put in about 20% of that roof for the household to be self-sufficient in terms of energy bills.
Yeah, well, let's say you come against a good problem, which is you have massive demand. How much can you supply here?
Well, we're pretty excited, but you know, let's get the baby steps done. Let's execute first with what we've got. So we've got a 50 megawatt. Production a factory in San Marino, where we pay no corporation tax for several years. That factory is ready to go with 50 megawatts. And if you think that we're pricing at around 60, 65 watts, eurocents a watt, that's a potential 100% output of maximum of 30 million euros. Obviously, we'll have downtime, but you know, the factory is a sizable one, and we know that we can double capacity. We can actually double that capacity at way below replacement cost. So there's economies of scale when we move from 50 megawatts to 100. It won't cost the same as the replacement cost to double that capacity. And the reality is that this is a vast captive market right across the spectrum from residential to industrial. And we know that, you know, this is a business that will grow substantially from the size that we've got in terms of our installed base today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the other two businesses you're invested in is the gas absorption, CO2, and the filtration. So gas absorption, tell us a bit about that. I know very little about this, and why is it going to be sort of commercially viable for you?
Yeah, I mean, the way we've put together Vertitech is that you've got the solar, you've got the filtration, which I'll come to. Both of those businesses are imminent revenue-generating businesses. And the beast that I say lurks within Vertitech is the liquid gas absorption business. This has a very powerful global set of patents. It is the world's only co-current absorber. Now, absorption goes on in industry. Separation of liquids and gases goes on across the spectrum of industries, from the food and beverage, oil and gas, pharmaceutical, semiconductor business. We happen to be doing our trials in CO2 capture at the moment, and we are in partnership with the illustrious subsidiary of the Norwegian government, SINTEF. That is a Michelin star, if you like, in terms of development of cutting-edge CO2 capture technologies. And the reason we're in partnership with Norway is because they have the most advanced solvent that is used in the capture of CO2. It's a precipitating solvent, which doesn't work in rudimentary absorbers, which are packed with stainless steel packing. And our technology is one which doesn't use stainless steel internals in the absorber. We use, which is what our patent actually says, it's an aqueous froth bubble nucleation process, which is millions of bubbles that form and collapse. And that provides 3 to 4 times mass transfer superiority to the conventional absorber that exists in the marketplace. And in 18 to 24 months, it's a longer gestation, but it's been going through years of development. It's already proven in the field. We've been on a coal-fired plant in Australia and proven the efficiency of this technology. And now we're developing it for mass market deployment in partnership with the Norwegian government and the Canadian government. And that will be ready in the next 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, but you say this is a beast within there. What's the size of this market? Because I have no idea or concept of
this. I mean, I'd like to say that all three core areas that we're focused on are all multi-billion dollar markets. The solar roof tiles, the filtration, deodorization captive market, and then CO2 capture. And I will add that the CO2 capture is just one application. The WES technology, the co-current absorption technology, once industry sees that it's the most efficient way to separate liquids and gases and to capture particulates, you've got a number of applications in the oil and gas industry that can be deployed. You know, if you're offshore on a rig and you need a smaller footprint and you want to reduce your capex and opex in capturing CO2, because regulation makes oil companies and gas companies capture the CO2 at source. A smaller footprint and a lower OPEX opportunity is one that will be very, very well taken by the oil and gas industry.
Okay, and just a brief summary on the filtration business you've invested in. So what's this all about, and what potential does this have?
The filtration business, this in simple terms, is a deodorization plant. And it removes 99% of odors at head height. Now, we're doing trials in the United States, and just to give you an idea of the size of the opportunity and the nature of the opportunity, in Florida alone, there are 3,000 captive plants. Now, we've been on a wastewater plant in Toho. This is a classic example of how important a solution this is to a problem. if you are a wastewater plant and you're in a built-up area and you're next to a school and you're giving off a disgusting smell, in the States you can be fined anything up to $250,000 a year. So these machines offer a solution and an elimination of fines that these companies will be, these public authorities could be having to pay, and actually the payback could be something like 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it's a very important new market, if you like, as regulation becomes more onerous. If you're a fish processing plant or you're a coffee grinding plant and you're giving off a bad smell, or you're a poultry operation in North England, you could be likely to either pay a big fine or be shut down. And so these machines are going to be deployed right across several geographies. We're talking to wastewater operators in Scandinavia, the UK, and we're most likely to be commercial first in Florida.
Yeah, okay. Well, I say you're listed today, and you've raised, what, correct me if I'm wrong, 2.75 million, and your market cap is around about 16.5 million, is that right?
Correct.
And correct. So, as you're sort of new to the market, I suppose it's be good to give us a bit of your background as a founder and maybe sort of highlight some of the backgrounds of the board, if you would, George.
Yeah, I'll be quick with myself. I don't like to talk too much about my own career. There's better people on my board. I was 25 years in investment banking. I started life as a credit analyst and a banks analyst, and moved into European equities, and then about a decade ago left the cosseted world of employment, became an entrepreneur, and got involved with several startups, and went through all the difficulties of starting green tech technology businesses, putting management together, raising millions of dollars, and getting technologies out into the marketplace. And one of the first technologies that I got involved with was the liquid gas absorption technology in Wes, where I got it capitalized, and I managed to get major strategic investors in, and that sort of brought me to today. And then in Vertitech, I founded Vertitech, and we've put together what I think is a very strong team. And it's important to stress that it's not just great technologies that makes a success of a business. The other pillar is to have a very strong board and very strong management team. And if you look at the board that we've got in Vertitech today, this is not a board that comes on board to remain in a 50 megawatts solar business and filtration and absorption business, but to grow this significantly. We've got the ex-Chief Technology Officer of Petrofac, FTSE 250 company, Jeff Nesbitt. We've got the ex-CFO of Banco Santander Worldwide, José Luis del Valle Doblado. These are just examples of the caliber of people that have come on our board. And it's not just from a corporate governance perspective that this is important, but the referrals and the amount of captive business that we've got, which come through our team, which is extremely exciting. We've got business in solar coming from UAE, from Australia, from Southern Europe and Northern Europe. So we have more captive demand through the channels of the very important people that are in our team.
Excellent stuff. Well, as if that wasn't enough, if someone's listening right now, George, and they're not following you on Vox, which is highly likely, so you're brand new to the market today, then could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please, on Vox?
Oh, I'll try and keep it to three reasons. First of all, I think we have game-changing cutting-edge technologies being rolled out in what are new, fast-growing, multi-billion-dollar global markets. I mean, these are really new markets, and we are right at the forefront, and we can put ourselves down with a very big footprint early on. Secondly, you're buying in. If you buy in now, you're buying in low at key inflection points on all three of the core activities. Really seriously, there is a J-curve effect in moving to revenue generation in two of the businesses, very strong cash flow yield support, and major value uplift. And then thirdly, I think that, there's a rarity value in terms of green energy technologies. Everyone loves to get into green energy technologies, but the experience that people have had of a lot of green energy technologies is that it's jam for tomorrow. Well, this is a set of businesses that are really going to make money now. And as a fundamental analyst, what I'm absolutely insistent on is that this business has strong free cash flow yield support in year one. The solar is going to provide you with very strong free cash flow yield support and cash accretion via dividends. and effectively so much so that the you've got a free option on the other two technologies in the business.
Excellent. George, good to speak to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Hi there, Justin. Yeah, good morning to you. Very well, very well.
Yeah, what's that? I mean, the funny thing is, a lot of people say it's August, is quite quiet, the markets are generally, but there's a lot of results out, isn't there?
Oh, there always is. I mean, anyone who works in the markets knows that earnings season is the hectic and busy time. Because of the way the UK reporting calendar works, you have a lot of companies with end of June accounting periods. And consequently, 6-8 weeks later, guess what happens? The results come out. So August is always a busy time. And you can see that today. I mean, it might even be sunny outside. We're all stuck in the office looking at numbers.
Well, do you know what? At last it's sunny. What, I don't know what the heck has happened with the weather. It's odd.
If we were recording this 24 hours ago, I'd be saying it's a good job we're inside because it's Noah's Ark weather outside. But there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, what are we looking at, Chris?
So I thought Glencore. Now, listeners no doubt will remember Glencore, huge mining company. 2 years ago, thick end of 2 years ago now, we had the infamous Investec broker note, which said they were worth precisely 0 pence a share.
Was that 2 years ago, was it?
That was 2 years ago.
Wow.
I know, how time flies, eh? And how their share price has flown as well. So the mining sector's had a pretty wonderful renaissance, certainly compared to those dog days a couple of years odd ago. And obviously Glencore's augmented that with a money raising as well, just to help tide them through. But bottom line is today, they're going to do something different. You can see it in the numbers, because now they've gone from the famine of 0 pence share price targets and people worrying about debt to now the feast of having what is known as an under-leveraged balance sheet, which basically means they've got too strong a balance sheet and they want to spend some cash. They've said in the numbers today that they've got net debt down to 1x EBITDA, and they want to push it up to 2x at some point if they can find the right deal. So it's funny how these things roll on. You know, this shows you the wonderful life of the stock market. 2 years ago, people were wondering whether this was a zero. Now, the company's on the front foot looking for acquisitions. Looking through the numbers today, yeah, good progress on all fronts, as you would expect. You know, many metals prices are a little bit higher. That they're still keeping their costs under control, etc. But I think people were wondering whether they were going to hike the dividend aggressively or talk about acquisitions, and it seems to be a bit more of the latter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It fell for a while, didn't it? Because I was looking at the chart there, and I'm realizing it started to fall pretty much, when was this? 2015, in June 2015.
Yeah.
And then it had a little bounce on a support level at £2.40, and then it went all the way down to... I always see this, you can get some excellent recovery plays. I mean, but you've got to look for a confirmation of a bottom in the chart to make sure it's not just spiked down, a little bounce back up. There's no such thing as a V-shaped recovery. So as you see, Glencore, it touched originally a 67 pence.
That's right.
On the 25th of the 9th. And then it went back up, rose back up to 140. People may have thought, this is the recovery. But no, it was just a V-shape. Yeah. And it came back down again in the first of almost January of 2016, down to that 69 pence again, a little bit higher, a higher low, and then started rising. And now, look what they are now, 335. Yeah. You'd been laughing if you'd bought the dip there. And, go on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, as I say, it was the whole thing that caused that big dip to sub 70 pence was that 0 pence price target, which was absolutely bonkers. But look at the chart. What I would say to listeners, punch up a 5-year chart on Glencore, have a look at that biggish resistance at the circa 350 pence level, and think to yourself, this company is just about to complete the cycle, so to speak, by making an acquisition. That's kind of what they've hinted. There's lots of chat in the market what they might be. They've made an approach to an American agricultural trading company called Bunge, which I have to say doesn't excite me. I reckon it's all done. I have to say, I like that there's certain elements of the miners that I like at this moment in time, but I have to say Glencore, it feels as if the cycle has kind of fully evolved for them. And once they're starting talking aggressively about buying something, using their balance sheet to leverage up again, I think maybe time to look for other opportunities.
Yeah, and also they like I said, this level now, they've tried to beat. I mean, they've been here just before a couple of months back at 344. It dipped back down to sort of 270. It's come back to 340 odd, and we may see a double top here. So they may see a stall here if it doesn't push through this level. What else is happening there?
Well, if the complete polar opposite to the Glencore chart is the Amec Foster Wheeler chart. Now you recall Amec Foster Wheeler used to be known as Amec. They disastrously merged with the Foster Wheeler US sort of oil services and other energy services business just at exactly the wrong moment before the oil price and related plunge, and it absolutely creamed their shares. Now, roll it forward to this year. Obviously, they've been chatting with John Wood Group. A deal was struck, and unfortunately, whilst it was celebrated initially, what's happened since is that people's scepticism about the oil market, whether the deal makes sense or not, even some of the sort of the gubbins behind are these companies facing petrofac type issues with various contracts have all been hitting the market. My observation is this: there's a lot of bad news in oil services at the moment. Clearly, people are skeptical about the oil price. I like to buy skepticism, and what I observe technically, and it's true for the Amec Foster Wheeler share price as well as the John Wood Group share price, is that, my goodness, they are going in a very tight sideways range at the moment and looked absolutely primed, in my opinion, from a sort of a fundamental basis to break out. And when I see that sort of fundamental and technical combo, I get a bit excited. The numbers were nothing special today. They talked about challenging conditions, but it's all about this deal. And like any decent deal, you bring two, all right companies together. John Wood's a bit better than Amec in terms of broader orientation. You can do things like cut costs, get synergies, efficiencies and whatever. And you never know, they might just combine at the absolute bottom of the oil services market, which in my opinion, we're at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's trading in a sort of range between £4 and £6. They're £4.48 there. So, interesting.
But look at that last couple of months. It's been such a tight range. And the same for the John Wood Group share price, which obviously the two are interlinked because the deal is a share-based deal. And what's really interesting is when you get that and you get these superficially look like poor comments today, and the Amec share, when I last looked, was up a touch. That's not a bad combination of results. I would say oil services, my feeling is that, and I source this from places like the States, which tend to be leading on these things, maybe a bit more insightful. I think oil services are now at the bottom and actually are interesting investments.
Do you worry about it? You know, we've seen this, pervade through all sort of parts of society now, this thought that we are going, from governments being pushed, but governments, cutting down on petrol, diesel cars, all going electric. Do you think that, these big service companies and oil companies, I mean, the bigger oil companies look too bad because obviously they're diversifying already. They are buying into clean tech and clean energy. But do you think, some of these service companies are going to suffer because, sooner or later, the balance will tip towards almost, I know we're only at about 1%, I think, of cars on the road at the moment are electricity, but, as it doesn't have to get to 50%. It already needs to get to about 10%, 15%. You'll see a major change in supply demand of oil. What do you think about, the lack of demand for these kind of services?
Yeah, it's clearly a very reasonable point, and I'd throw in there also energy efficiency routines across both homes and businesses and everything else as also being influential. But there's a bigger game out there. There's two games. On the demand side, there's the emerging markets. And every time we take off a barrel of oil here in terms of our demand, because of electric cars or efficiency initiatives, just think about what the emerging markets are adding just because of their population growth and general economic development. And that dwarfs the developed world. The second aspect is supply. And even though we have seen clearly some US shale sources of supply being superficially very cheap, they have what is known as very high depletion. And unless you put the investment in, you're not going to get the output out ultimately. And this is where I think the market gets interesting. I listen a lot to companies in the States like Schlumberger and Halliburton, and the biggest names in oil services. And what they're saying is, at this moment in time, a lack of investment at the moment. And what the trouble is, you're storing up an issue of tighter supply demand in the near term, 2-3 years, which ultimately will feed through into higher oil prices and then ultimately a rush to put new capex in. So my feeling is we're bumping along the bottom at the moment, And as the stock market looks forward, this is why for sensible oil services companies, I reckon you should be looking at them today. And I think this Amit John Wood deal, there's a bit of self-help there as well in terms of cost cutting, which to me makes it, you know, quite interesting.
Yeah, okay, marvellous stuff. And that's AMFW, of course. Right, what's the next one? Any others, yeah, Chris?
Last one, we're going to go to the brick industry. So we're going to be bricking it and having a quick look at Ibstock. Now, Ibstock is a company not known to too many, based in the Midlands in Leicestershire. A ticker is IBST, only floated on the market a year and change ago, but they've done rather well. And what I like about Ibstock is this, and it comes back again to what I was talking a little bit about the oil services area, is that the supply-demand dynamics of bricks is absolutely great at the moment. It's not because the demand is rampant. You know, we all find stories about the housing market is overextended, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it's the supply side. And the supply of bricks in the UK market is really tight at the moment. There's been a lack of investment. And it's only recently companies like Ibstock have been putting new money in order to build new plants, more efficient, more output, etc. And there's a big opportunity for domestic UK brick companies to supply more to the UK brick market rather than importing bricks from other countries, which, funnily enough, has got more expensive, obviously, with the whole pound plunging matter and whatever. Ibstock, sensible company, sensible numbers today, 4% yielder. I like the way the management talked to the market, straight to the point. My view would be one well worth looking at. They've done well. I think there's probably more in this one.
Yeah, I mean, they've done well. There's a strong momentum stock there. That's the only problem buying momentum stocks is, you know, you think, when do I get in? And it, almost more often than not, invariably, you buy at the time you think is good on a dip and it dips further. You think, oh, yeah. But it's one of those things, you know?
But absolutely. But this is why, Justin, I would always say to people, then do your fundamental work. You know, for me, I like technical charts. They're interesting, but yeah. I'm a fundamentalist, from a kind of a fundamental, so to speak, orientation. Mm. And bottom line is, look at things like dividends, look at things like cash flow, look at what the management are saying, do some basic earnings numbers, understand the strategy, and then also look at the chart. You know, that's going to tell you something too. You know, investment's not easy, but a little bit of work goes a long way. So yeah. I think fundamentally this one ticks the box. And you can then debate about when to exactly to get in or not. That's another story.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Sorry. I was just saying fundamentals, definitely. But also technicals, because if you do your homework on a stock, then all you need to do is a bit of timing to get, you know, to fine tune that. So you're right. When a share price dips, some people are scared to buy because they think, oh, what's happening here? But if you know the story fundamentally, then you'll have confidence buying at a dip, you know?
Precisely. I've always found, Justin, buy low, sell high works for me.
I know. Do you know what? It's one of those financial cliches that, you know, it's there. It's a cliche for a reason. And when it comes down to it, it's a lot harder to do than said, isn't it? Because, you know, human emotions get involved and you don't want to miss out and you start buying at a high and you find, uh-oh, I did the opposite of what I should be doing.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, excellent. Cool, Chris. Good to speak to you and speak next week, fella.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, it's time for the top five. Most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at 5. It's there quite a lot of late. UK Oil and Gas, UKOG. At 4, Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. At 3, Ascent Resources, AST. At 2, Telit Communications, TCM. I wonder where they are today, because they've fallen heavily last few days because of, I think, a warning of some kind of trading update. Then their CEO stood down. Well, they're up 10% a day because they've been down about 40% in the last few days. CEO stood down to do historical indictment charges. At two, that was Telit. And at one, the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was Angus Energy, ANGS. Okay, here's top five most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours. At 5, Strategic Minerals, SML. Hopefully chatting to John, the managing director, very soon on the podcast. And that was an RNS about the Q2 update and a record July in monthly sales at Cobra. At 4, Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, appointment of senior advisor. At 3, this was late yesterday afternoon. This is why it's been highly followed. I think 30% up on this RNS yesterday. Angus Energy, ANGS, OGA approval received regarding Lindsay X2 well. And at 2 there, Ascent Resources, Holdings and Company. Number 1, EVR Holdings, or EVRH, And Melody VR signs 5 music licensing agreements across mostly across Europe, I think. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.